If you broken clown and a millionaire, the joke is on you. Money ain't everything, I never say that. But to get those stones, knowing they sell their soul to get wherever they at. Just know these verses is some they gon' forever play back.
Yo, check this out. You're live in the mix right now with DJ Rossi Ross.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
You realize consciousness is affected. There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. What? You realize our consciousness is affected. There is this thing going on.
What is called? The news brought to you live.
Welcome to the Friday edition of CKUT's Community News Program, Off the Hour. Today is January 14th. My name is Brian Jefferson, and I will be your host today. CKUT broadcasts from the unceded traditional territory of the Anishinaabeg and the Kanyekahaga, one of the founding nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
C is for
cauliflower,
confusion, creation,
pickle, K is for
kitten,
cam,
seat, wait, Sandra, see, U, unbearable,
U is for underground,
oh, yeah,
umbrella,
T, trite,
tremendous,
torment,
tire,
C, K,
I can't think of a U one,
T,
F is for famous,
fun, fumble, M is for Montreal.
First, news. Premier François Legault announced this week that adults who refuse to be vaccinated against COVID-19 will be subject to a financial penalty. Legault says that the, quote, healthcare contribution, end quote, will not apply to people with some medical exemptions. He says that the remaining 10% of unvaccinated Quebecers threaten the province's precarious healthcare system. Details about the size of the penalty and its implementation remain unannounced. And homeless shelters in Montreal are now allowed to open to full capacity regardless of COVID outbreak status. This comes after the now former director of public health, Horacio Arruda, granted them permission on Monday as Montreal experienced deep freezing temperatures. A 74-year-old man who was homeless died on the streets this week from the cold. The city opened another temporary homeless shelter at the Stade de Soccer de Montréal in Saint-Michel. Housing advocates say people need permanent homes, not more temporary shelters. And Quebecers will need to present their vaccination passport to enter the SAQ or the SQDC starting on Tuesday, January the 18th. Health Minister Christian Dubé says that the province will eventually require people to receive 3 doses of a COVID-19 vaccine to hold on to their vaccine passports. And on Monday, Quebec's 10 p.m. curfew will be lifted.
There's a lot going on in the world today. See how it affects Montreal's Black and Caribbean community. Read the Community Contact. News, features, opinions, music reviews, cultural events, and so much more. Our voices, our perspectives, our community. Published every 2 weeks, pick it up at your favorite community spot or visit us online at our new and dynamic website, mtlcommunitycontact.com. Easy to navigate and lots to enjoy. Archived issues also on the site and available on the web. That's mtlcommunitycontact.com. Stay in contact.
In the case of symptoms similar to those of COVID-19, such as fever, cough, sore throat, loss of taste, or smell, you should take a rapid home screening test. If you test positive, isolate yourself at home and please follow the self-isolation instructions. If you don't have a rapid home screening test, please self-isolate for the recommended period. Visit quebec.ca/self-isolating for complete instructions on how to protect yourself and others. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome back to CKUT's Friday Off the Hour. The time is just after 5 p.m. My name is Brian Jefferson. Friday's Off the Hour team is sharing the air with creators that we think you'd want to hear more from while operations remain remote due to the pandemic. We're going to continue to do that today. We'll tune into a January 12th episode from the producers from Embers. They talk to Montreal-based author Sid Brunette about anarchism, community, and sex work. We'll bring you back at the top of the hour with some news that you can use. So stay with us on CKUT 90.3 FM.
You are listening to From Embers, a weekly show on CFRC 101.9 FM about anarchist and anti-authoritarian ideas and practice. We are broadcasting from the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples on land that has come to be called Kingston, Ontario, Canada, because of the thievery and brutality of the Canadian state and its empire-loving parents. From Embers is about fires, some real and some metaphorical. Fires started generations ago and tended to over the years. Little sparks all across this territory that we hope will grow, spread, and engulf the thieving state called Canada and the capitalist system that has plagued this land since the fur trade. Welcome to the first From Embers of 2022. This episode features an interview with Sid V. Brunette, an anarchist and former stripper whose recent memoir, This Is My Real Name, came out late last year and details 10 years of working as a stripper in various clubs in Ontario. In this interview, they talk about stripping, sex and gender, and how they feel about writing and talking openly about their personal life. A quick content warning, this interview and the book deal with drug use, self-harm, sexual violence, and a number of other tough but important topics.
My name is Sid V. Brunette.
We are here to talk about this book, This Is My Real Name. Do you want to tell us just a little bit about the book? Like, what is the book? What is it about?
Yeah, so this is a memoir that I wrote, and it spans kind of the 10 years, so most of my 20s, of being a stripper in multiple clubs across Canada.
And why did you write this book?
I wrote this book because I've always wanted to write. It's like the main thing that I've always wanted to do. And even when I was getting into stripping and sex work in my early 20s, I knew I wanted to write about it at that point and was able to start keeping journals, I mean, pretty compulsively, that I was able to like look back on and see how I felt about it kind of from the beginning. I also hadn't seen any specific Canadian kind of content about stripping in particular. And also, I'd be really happy to read more of that kind of content. So if folks follow me on any of my social medias, which is mainly Instagram and Twitter, definitely feel free to like DM me books by other strippers, because I want to read more of that as well. So I also felt like there was kind of a lack on that kind of subject.
Now that you've written it, what do you hope people kind of get from it or learn about stripping or sex work by reading this book?
Yeah, I think the main theme that I'm always kind of coming back to is just being that sex work is work, and it deserves to be analyzed, critiqued, and celebrated just like any other job under capitalism. Any job that we work can be difficult and have really specific and unique working conditions. So I wanted to use the memoir as a form to do a pretty in-depth exploration of specifically stripping and the working conditions that happen with that. And I did want to choose like a first-person perspective to do that. And I wanted to like include the stories of other people that I worked with, but not specifically to try to speak for them. I think I also wanted people to know that sex work is a very broad and common industry where a lot of people make money. I don't think this is at all specific to the anarchist community, but I know for sure that a lot of the folks that I'm in community with do engage in sex work, and some of them consider this to be an identity or a career, and other people see it more as something that they do kind of like periodically just to like make money or hustle, but it's definitely part of the landscape of every day that I see kind of like happening every day. It seems like it's very deeply integrated into like the fabric of getting by. And then just that, like, there's so much stigma around sex work, even in like radical communities. And I wanted this memoir to really kind of dig into the nitty gritty, as well as the like everyday realities of the work from like a really singular perspective.
Some of the stories in this book are like quite deeply personal. How did you decide what to put in the book and what to leave out? Like, how did you decide how personal to go?
Yeah, I think like reflecting on it, it's very much like the writing process was very much a process of layering continually and then reading and editing and then kind of like writing to fill the blanks in order to make it make sense. It started as like a collection of poetry, more in the theme of like Amber Dawn's How Poetry Saved My Life. So poetry about sex work. But when I was kind of like workshopping it with early mentors in some of the mentorship program that I got into, my mentor was like, this isn't very like clear because there's no first person perspective. We as the reader are unable to like really connect to who the character is. So these things that are being said, which is at that point, I was pretty obsessed with like the dialogue that I was hearing in strip clubs, especially from clients or between like other girls. So I'd be like writing these things, but my mentor person was like, we don't have a way to connect with this without the first person. So at that point, I kind of decided to make it into a memoir. And then that started quite a long, well, a 2-year process of deciding like what things from my life or Michelle's life. And just for frame of reference, I'll kind of be like using Michelle and I kind of interchangeably for this interview.
Michelle is the character that is you in the book, basically.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's still a confusing thing that is, it doesn't feel totally settled for me. Sometimes when I'm talking about I, it's very much me and the person I am now. And sometimes when I talk about Michelle, it's her as her persona and her character at that time, and specifically what's represented in the book. They're not like perfect overlaps, because like you're saying, there's obviously stuff that I chose not to include. And I think that process was just like a really deeply personal investigation of being like, which things are necessary for the comprehension of this narrative, and which things should be left out to make things clearer. And I think that's something that people that write memoirs have to deal with in general. Is like one of the things that I remember having to like do some moving around with was the timeline, because as like a person who moves around a lot, and like I moved to Montreal and I moved back and I moved here and I moved back, and all of that was like a bit confusing and overwhelming for the people that were trying to help me make it a clear story. So I think the best advice that I got from a mentor was being like, the thing that you have to be the truest to is the emotion and what is emotionally being portrayed in this scene. It's less important to be like, what is the exact date of this happening? And it's more important to convey truthfully the emotion, the emotional impact. So that's definitely what I was focusing on when I was deciding between what things to include and not include. And I think there's like kind of like a tip of the hat to that at a certain scene when Michelle's in Sudbury and she's having like maybe just like one of the worst days that she's kind of had at work. And there's this guy who's just asking her the same series of questions that she gets asked all the time, which include what is your real name, but are also things like, do your parents know you do this? Or like, you're too pretty to be working here. Like that kind of thing that's said over and over again. And she has like a really strong reaction to it and has like a little meltdown and goes into the bathroom with her friend and is just like, is there nothing that I can keep to myself? Like, why am I always being asked to give so much of like who I am or something? Why can't I be more private. And writing the memoir really felt like a parallel experience to that in some ways, of writing something that I felt was like quite deeply personal or was like really difficult that like actually had happened to me, and then having an editor come back and be like, we need more from you, or we need you to like make this more relatable, make it more clear, like maybe it's clear to you but it's not clear to us, and like really kind of digging into a lot of really difficult experiences over time.
You mentioned briefly that like you think there is a lot of stigma surrounding stripping, including even in your own community. How does it feel to put this book out there that's about that? Do you feel like it's like cathartic? Do you worry about judgment? Like, what's your relationship to that now that it's out in the world?
Releasing it definitely felt like kind of coming out on a number of levels all at once. I feel like the Michelle character is very clear that she's a sex worker and also a drug user and also queer and also poly, which was something that maybe I hadn't really intended to share necessarily so much. And I think also making choices at a certain point with this book to include experiences that were also sex work, because there's a lot of stigma in the industry between being like, quote, just a stripper, which means that you only dance and you don't ever offer extras or anything like that. Whereas Michelle's character does from time to time offer extras. That also felt like a coming out as well. And I think it didn't necessarily feel good to share these stories. Like, it still feels pretty overwhelming sometimes when I like open the paper copy of the book, which exists now, and kind of flip through it and land on a random page. And I'm like, oh, I put this experience in here. Like, well, that's really intense, you know, but it feels right, I guess, because I feel super committed to the long-term goal of writing the best possible way that I can. And it felt like the most work that I was going to be able to like put into that would be to examine my own experiences first and do all of that work with like style, character, plot, that kind of investigation through my own life and lens first. And then hopefully in the future I can like write about things that are maybe less potentially extremely personal to me, but we'll have to see.
There are also obviously other people in the book. Did you have ethical questions about writing about your friends here? Did you talk to people about it before you put them in it?
Yeah. I was pretty lucky in that, like I said, I knew pretty early on that I was going to be writing about this as I was going. So, which I didn't know, but friends have told me that like pretty early in our experiences together, I'd been like, just so you know, I'm writing about this or whatever. So they kind of knew. And then I feel really lucky in that I was able to specifically talk to almost all of the people who are kind of like main or secondary characters and get consent from those people. And that process looked like sending them drafts of specifically their parts or what I was, the dialogue that I was going to have people saying so that they could reflect on it. And then also asking folks if there were specific things that they wanted changed, because I think this is kind of common knowledge, but in memoir, you're especially in like tense kind of situations like this, where these stories are not particularly old either. They're like from kind of 13 years ago to a year before the pandemic. So there is potential for people to like be recognized. And I tried to get around that by making sure that identifying details were obscured. And in the process of consent, making sure that the people that read their parts were able to be like, can you change this thing? Or can you change this more? Or yeah. And that was really good. And then all of those people somehow magically have been incredibly supportive, including my partner and including all of the like main friend characters, which is really amazing. Sadly, there were some people that I couldn't get consent from because it didn't feel safe. Which is just like an ongoing issue kind of. And I think like in memoir writing, there's like many perspectives on that. Like I've heard somebody say a thing like, if they didn't want you to write bad things about them, then they shouldn't have done bad things to you or whatever, which I think is like a very simplistic way of looking at that. And that's not how I subscribe to that. But I think there was only like one or two characters where I really didn't feel a level of safety to connect with them about the fact that this was released. So I'm not sure how they're kind of taking that. And then in terms of like other girls or other clients, I think I have moments of feeling like complication or a bit of like awkwardness or something, because with the extended characters or like the tertiary characters, a lot of them are not people that I have like ongoing relationships with. So for those, it was very important to like obscure any kind of identifying details. And I really spent a lot of time kind of like trying to get right with myself in terms of how I felt about that relationship and be very as fair as I could towards it. For example, there's a relationship with a character kind of like early on where it's a work friend and not a friend that Michelle is working with. And she's like a person who really struggles with alcohol. And there's like kind of this like scene that's like a scuffle where there's a bouncer involved and it's just like pretty. And I think writing about that scene, it took a number of years. Actually, it was one of the first scenes that I wrote, and it took a number of years to be like, to figure out why it felt so hard to have written it. And I think the answer is that Michelle doesn't particularly feel good about her role in that situation. Like, reflecting on that, I think she would feel like she wished she'd been more supportive or more like vocally helpful of her friend, or like been able to step in like a different kind of way. So I think it's important for me to also represent that truth of like the not having a perfect narrator and having like a complicated narrator who doesn't feel like the best about some of her own interactions. And part of that also helps me keep to like a notion of truth without necessarily like involving every person that was written about, because it's kind of possible and our lives have like completely diverged. But yeah, I think that the concept of consent is really... So another thing that a memoir once said to me about consent in memoir is she was like, it seems like you're very concerned about this thing, but like, think about any man and how they would not give a shit about whether they're getting consent from people to write about. And I'm also not like, yeah, 100% that's the route to go either, because I think consent is actually really important. I think that's a very complicated thing to say.
We've interviewed Anne Hansen a number of times here on the show. She's somewhat recently written a memoir about her time inside Canadian prisons and jails. Mm-hmm. And like a concern that she clearly has grappled with a lot is the idea that like you would write about somebody who you're not friends with necessarily in a way that shows the complexity of that character and like some of their flaws as well as some of their best traits. And then that she would end up back inside and encounter that person. And like, what if they've read the book and it changes that relationship? Like people are, they know that like she's the one who wrote that book.
Right.
Which like actually like as I was reading your book though, I was struck by some of the similarities in terms of how you portray both like friendship among like the girls in the book and also some of the conflicts they're in and how they do read a little bit like her stories about time inside, which then at one point a character in the book is also like, oh, that sounds like jail to me kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I wonder if you think about that, like how like having written about the experiences could like change your role in those environments. Or whether you just kind of assume that people won't.
There's definitely some assumption that people won't read it, which is fine and I think somewhat true. But then, yeah, that's for sure something that I think about. And I think this being an anarchist podcast and me being an anarchist person, I think one of the questions is like, anarchism isn't, it's very much like a side or a third plot. It's not like the main plot in any kind of way. It sort of like informs the character's decisions, but isn't something that's like super fleshed out in depth. And I feel like that's because I'm still so embedded in that community that it felt kind of like too close or not something that I want to write about in this moment because it's like ongoing and unfolding or something. And I think one of the hardest parts about writing this was being like, it's possible that this will mean that I'm not able to strip anymore. And without there being potentially like the consequences of having written this thing, potentially. Not that any of those have happened yet, but like they're kind of like up in the air or something. And I think that would mean like probably not feeling like I could go back to the places like the home club that's referred to, or how it might feel really weird if I did run into some of those people that are written about. I think the overlaps with like certain parts of it being similar in some ways to jail culture also is reflected in how insular it is and how many subcultural rules that are have potentially really big consequences if you break them, including like physical violence or like getting jumped or something like that, that have to, and the rules that have to do with like cleanliness or like stuff around clients and like how you're allowed to approach people and how you're allowed to like interact with other girls. All of that kind of stuff can be really complicated. And I know when Michelle first started, and is something that I often hear from like, quote, baby strippers or people that are just kind of getting in, is being like, I thought this thing was just like taking your clothes off, and it's not. It's very much like a culture. So there is some fear about like writing about that from like so many different angles. And it also brings up like this other thing that's that also feels really difficult. That's like an ongoing issue for me, is being like, I kind of like quit, or like the book ends, whatever, about like a year before the pandemic starts. And so Michelle took that kind of year off to deal with like the burnout and to consider like if it was possible if she could like get back into work later, because it just became like really difficult by the end. And so now it's been kind of like 4 years of, I think, only having like a few kind of opportunities in that time to like do some kind of sex work in that time, and really taking a lot of time of not doing that anymore. And then it brings up questions of like authority to tell narratives. And it's been so much internal debate, like with myself and also talking to like other friends who are currently still doing sex work, because it's such an insular culture and also like a youth cult in a lot of ways. It's one, very easy to get like pushed or aged out for like a number of reasons. And then it becomes this thing that it's really hard to kind of jump back into, because the rules kind of like evolve and change. Like, given that there's been a pandemic, so strip clubs have been kind of like shuttered almost for 3 years. And it seems like they're on the list of things that are getting shuttered again currently. That's meant that a lot of the work has changed really drastically during that period of time, because sex work literally never stops. It just like evolves and changes. And so when I talk about strip clubs, I'm talking about something that existed, you know, 5 years ago. And realistically, walking into that space, I'm not sure what would exist or what wouldn't anymore. Like, things just changed so quickly, and so much happened like online during the pandemic. Like, the working space itself has really shifted and evolved and changed. So for me, that's where like the power of memoir comes in that like what I can speak to is Michelle's specific experience that happened like over this period of time, and that's sort of it. And then what I can do other than that is, yeah, ally myself with people who are doing the work currently and like listen to the ways that it's like changing and what the new frontiers and the new like difficulties are, without like constantly being stuck in how I remember things to be, because most likely it's drastically changed.
You are listening to From Embers on CFRC 101.9 FM, or you may be listening to the podcast edition of From Embers on your smartphone or another device. This episode features an interview with Sid V. Brunette about stripping, sex work, writing a memoir, and much more. If you are enjoying this interview and want to read the book, I highly recommend it. You can order it from Arsenal Pulp Press or at most bookstores. Check out the show notes of this episode for links.
I guess we're kind of talking about stripping now, so I might as well jump into like the questions I have that are more like actually about the book. Mm-hmm. So at one point, your character, Michelle, you help another less experienced person get into stripping. And that person does end up working in the industry and like presumably earning money, but they also have a lot of seemingly negative experiences that are portrayed in the book. I was curious about like your overall take home from that scene. Like, would you still encourage someone to do that work in the way that you seem to have done in the book? Like, is it overall worth it to you, I guess, is the like maybe meta question there.
Yeah, I think that's it's a super difficult question. And I think for me, it would really depend completely upon like a direct and unique relationship with a person who was like asking if they should start sex work or something like that. And I think it's important for me to say that I would never broadly tell anyone they should start sex work, but that if I had like a friend or a direct acquaintance who I had a really good level of communication with and ability to relate emotionally, who was saying that they were going to do something regardless of what I said and that they were looking for help, like, yes, of course I would help them, because sex workers are really the only people that keep sex workers safe. It's not going to be the police. It's not going to be like the managers or the bouncers or anything like that. So many times in this memoir, there's the concept of friends like overlapping with coworkers. I think the situation you're talking about is with the Bailey character in Sudbury and how that was her first time. And we went there with like a group, so there's sort of three of us who were going to that club for the first time. And the two other people had worked for different amounts of time, like I think 2 versus 4 years versus like a first shift. And in the kind of like traveling incarnation of stripping, you often go to kind of like a far-flung place for a period of time, often like a week. So we were all going there for like a week together to kind of like see how it goes. And I think in a situation where you can't trust all of those people, and also where there's alcohol and drug use involved, that relationship of friendship and coworker can be really important because you have the longstanding trust. There's also the example of Kiki at the end of the book, who's like at that point like much younger than the Michelle character, probably 10 years younger than her, in their early 20s, and they're just kind of showing up at this club for their first day. They have like no friends. They just decided to do this thing, and Michelle has kind of this moment of being like, oh, that's like a lot of emotional labor to kind of train somebody and to like spend hours kind of like talking them through the rules and like how not to fuck up and like what to do and how to hustle and like letting them into kind of the world instead of like icing them out. But she reflects on that experience as being like, so many people did that for her over the years, like constantly. It's girls being like, hey, there's this rule, maybe you didn't know about it, maybe like don't do that thing, or I see that you're doing this way. You'd probably make more money if you did it this way. And some of those things can be like harsh or mean, but also are like, I think, I mean, in good faith, like intended to be helpful. And then I think that's also why like community orgs that focus on sex work are also like actually really helpful things, because they can offer that kind of broad base of community. Because sex work is such a complex and a large industry, there's folks who work in sex work, but it's like they would never overlap, even though the experiences can sometimes be very similar. Or like you could have bad clients go to a massage parlor and then immediately go to a strip club and like do the same behavior. So orgs like Chez Stella in Montreal or Maggie's in Toronto do things like make bad trick lists, so people can kind of like keep track of aggressors or predators. And they also offer like pretty interesting things sometimes. Like I think there was during the pandemic, there's been like a Black Sex Worker Survival Fund and like other just kind of like resource and like harm reduction based things that I think help create like a sense of community, maybe for people who don't have the friendship connections to be able to like call in their friends and ask if they can work. And I think it's also important to just say that like folks choose sex work because based on a series of like pros and cons that are unique to each person, they've decided that it's the best option despite any of the cons that they've come up with. Like as Michelle talks about, she finds that it's the only job that she's able to like feasibly keep while having the types of mental health struggles that keep her from having other jobs successfully. Whereas for other workers, it's like the only option that pays them enough so they can feed their kids. Or for other people, it's a job that you can do while having like a criminal record or a disability. So sex workers are always weighing these pros and cons and then helping each other where they can. And then in terms of the question of like, is it worth it? I don't think I can answer that question for anybody else except to say that it was for Michelle. She learned so much about like gender and society and patriarchy and friendship, and That doesn't mean that there wasn't damage, but living under capitalism and needing to work to survive damages everybody. And the issue for me is that there's so much moral shame and judgment heaped onto sex workers because of the work that we do. And it becomes this thing where we're asked to make moral statements about the worthiness of the work that other professions like wouldn't be asked. So somebody being like, is it worth it for somebody to work as a carpenter for 10 years if their knees and back get fucked up? Or is it worth it for somebody to be a miner if their lungs get full of coal dust? But they were able to survive under capitalism. So I guess I worry sometimes that the question of like worth it also gets twisted with a moral issue of like worthiness or purity. And that's just like not a framework that I can really speak to.
Sure. I mean, I think a lot of people I know who worked in industries like that would say like, no, not really. Like if there was any way, like if I didn't need this money, I absolutely would not have done that work, you know? And I think it's easier in some ways to say that about like coal mining because people aren't being asked to have this kind of either or, like either you were like forced into coal mining or it's like somehow empowering and like beautiful or something like that.
Yeah.
I knew a lot of coal miners and carpenters growing up, and I think most of them would just be like, yeah, no, don't do it. Like, do something else, you know? Like, it's going to mess you up. But it's kind of more okay because it's like, I don't know. I feel like sex is just, like, so fraught in certain ways. Like, people expect, like, people to have more feelings about it, I guess, because it's sex. And maybe we do. Like, I mean, I think, you know, reasonably lots of people do have more feelings about it because it's sex also.
Yeah, I think one of the things Michelle does kind of early on is try to contextualize, like, why she got into the work, because I think it was sort of frustrating, like near the end of the publication process, one of the last edits was kind of being like, I still don't understand why she like chose to do this or something. So kind of like going back and peppering in more experiences from like other kinds of work, like before she started stripping, she was working in kitchens or like working as a roofer, and those jobs were like pretty terrible and also like, I mean, specifically roofing, but like also extremely dangerous and really taxing on the body. And so I think anytime that anyone engages with work, we're always making a like pros and cons list of like the things, how badly this will affect us, how much time we have to give this thing, how well are we being compensated, how bad are the working conditions, is there danger pay? And in my conception of it, stripping is a little bit, it's going in the direction of like getting a little bit of danger pay, and getting a lot of like your time back to be able to like do other things.
I kind of wanted to ask you like basically like what you think about sex. There is a character in the book who like pulls out this old tired radical feminist, like all sex with cis men is rape line. Which I think is a line that, like, we should sit with and think about. It's not, like, wholly stupid or wholly true for me. Michelle says that she disagrees with that line, but then kind of just, like, trails off and doesn't seem to have, like, a totally, like, entirely positive take on sex either. Like, it doesn't come across as, like, this is beautiful and empowering and perfect. I kind of wonder if you could explain, like, what Michelle's response was to that line.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say it's a radical feminist line. I didn't know that until you just said that, but that makes sense that it would be. Yeah, I feel like that line comes very true, like, through that character. And I think Michelle sort of doesn't necessarily shrug it off, but it's sort of like, that could be true for that person. And a statement like that being true doesn't feel strange to her. She's very much like, yeah, I could believe that statement for some people. She doesn't feel that for herself or based on her own experience of having like dated men in the past. But yeah, I think you're right in sensing that there's a bit of a trailing off. And for sure that scene was taken in and out of the book multiple times, like, and I think the choice to leave it in was made because it really contextualized the sort of separatist moment that those characters are both going through. in terms of their like queer politics at the time and just like their experience with men up until that given point, which extends through experiences of like not great things sexually happening in childhood or like having partners that were men be pretty terrible, like consistently. And I think some people are more likely to go towards like a black and white explanation in order to try to keep themselves safe in the future. And I think Michelle is a bit more ambivalent, maybe. And I think there's something with sex work as well that, which is something that having, you know, almost 4-ish years of not doing that as like a daily thing, that I can take a little bit of space from, but that the Michelle character absolutely couldn't take any space from, is that sex work kind of makes it easier to dehumanize men in a way, because it's sort of part of the job. And the context of kind of like patriarchy really laid bare in this way of like men literally paying for some level of access to, I mean, women broadly, but like other people's bodies, creates a context where you really kind of see the blatant sort of sharper edges of patriarchy. And I think to survive that kind of environment, it really cements in Michelle this idea that like all men are trash and all men do these things, because it's seeing client after client after client repeat pretty terrible behavior in really similar ways, in patterns of behavior that clearly fall under patriarchy and binary gender relations or whatever. And I think that's also why it can sometimes feel like empowerment in those kinds of spaces to, in a way, like kind of top from the bottom and to kind of play into the patriarchy and like take what you can in those kind of moments, which is money.
Do you think masculinity is like inherently bad or good or anything? Like, do you have, like, do you hate men, like, as a category? I guess obviously you don't hate. It is clear in the book that the character does not like individually avoid people who are men. Like, there is also like a long-term partner who is still there at the end, who is a man. But like as a social category or whatever, like, do you think masculinity is like morally or ethically one way or the other?
I think like early in the book, Michelle would have said yes, unequivocally, men are bad. And I think personally, and having some like distance and also having a few like pretty great long-term relationships with men, I would have a lot more nuance for that category of person. I think that obviously the society we live in has like a huge issue with toxic masculinity, and patriarchy and misogyny. And I do see those things like playing out in relationships a lot of the time, but I no longer feel so attached to the idea that like all men are bad or something like that.
One of the things that I find the hardest to read about in this book, and I feel the same way about Anne's prison memoir also, is like some of the girl-girl relationships in the book and some of the ways that women treat each other in the text also seem like in some cases quite toxic and terrible. I wonder if there's like some comment to make on that, or like if you have feelings about femininity, especially like mainstream hegemonic femininity, like that come out of having done this work at all. Like, how, like, what is your take home about like relating to women after this?
Yeah, I wonder, I think thinking about that question, I wonder if you can like point to maybe like a specific or like some examples that you were thinking of when you were like, sure, these specific female on female or whatever relationships are terrible.
Maybe
which ones were
like,
you thinking of?
Like early on when you're when Michelle begins working, and like, I don't have the book in front of me actually, but like some of the ways that like rules are enforced, or some of the fear that she feels about things like stepping on someone's toes while working in the club, or like approaching a client that she wasn't supposed to approach, or like even like talking to a girl after work who's just kind of like standing around waiting for a ride, like, where does that come from, and like, what do we make of that?
Yeah, I think that those kinds of things come from like a really intensive and also like encouraged by the structures of the club culture of scarcity and competition. And those kinds of behaviors, those like policing and rule enforcing behaviors, like sometimes even increase in severity in like the more intense or like quote higher end clubs, sometimes, not always. Like, I think the word that's coming to mind is like toxic femininity, as well as there's like toxic masculinity. There's also like a toxic kind of femininity that specifically in the context of strip clubs can be tied to ideas of like super high femness, which require like putting a certain amount and a particular kind of energy and money into looking a certain way and judging people who don't necessarily can't do that or don't want to do that, and enforcing pretty intense rules around like who can have what clients. In some ways it feels like a bit confusing from the outside. And I think as an anarchist person, I've been able to unlearn some of that, or like am in the process of unlearning the idea of like that it's necessary to compete with other quote women in order to get male attention or to keep male attention. I'm unlearning the idea that like, I think one of the relationships that like gets sort of like there's periods of like intense toxicity is between Michelle and her friend Gigi. Mm. When they're talking about like getting to this really ugly place of talking about like what is objective beauty and why do you have things that are body privileges that I don't have. And those are really like ugly, terrible conversations that I, on one hand, don't really want to be having, but on the other, I think strip clubs really, like I said, they really like lay bare the structures that hold up patriarchy, which is ideas like, youth and beauty and like white supremacist beauty. And they force the workers to deal with those things and police those things among themselves. And by they, I mean the clubs mm-hmm. and then the managers and the clients as well. Force a certain amount of infighting and competitiveness and this need to stay young and cutting edge beautiful in order to keep making money, or you get kind of like essentially like pushed out of certain kinds of the industry. And I think stripping is pretty intense for that. And I think Michelle definitely did not realize that getting into it, but there's like a period during kind of the middle years where she sort of starts passing. And as like a young kind of genderqueer person, it's very uncomfortable to sort of mold herself into like a high femme persona. It meant like growing out her hair. It meant like shaving her body in ways that she didn't do. It meant like learning how to do makeup and getting quite good at that, needing to get good at it and not just like passable at it, but like really good at makeup. And like wearing different clothes than she would normally wear. But there's a point where that starts to feel like an identity. Like it becomes, she starts to identify as somebody who's like high femme. And that's fine when it's working. But I think near the end of the book, which is early 30s, because the culture is quite intense with stripping in terms of like youth and like looking a certain way, Michelle starts to get alienated and pushed out and actually like fired from multiple clubs for, I'm going to put these things in quotes because I think they're incredibly relative and subjective, but for being quote like fat and old. And ugly also. So the fact that these standards are really like boiled down to kind of the high femme intensity, kind of like toxic femininity standards are boiled down to such extremes. It can look extremely ugly when that's coming from men and clients and bosses, but it also really hurts when it's coming from like other women. So I think that also like harkens back to why it's also so wonderful and beautiful to have kind of these like long-term friendships who are also at different times coworkers, because you can commiserate with those people and listen to kind of the struggles that they're dealing with as well, as the industry kind of one changes around us, and two, we in some ways like age out of things that age wouldn't have been an issue, you know, 10 years ago or something.
I mean, it makes me kind of think about like so like the conversation with Gigi that's happening is like Gigi is worried that she will not be allowed to work that night because she's like fatter than you. Mm-hmm. And that you will. And I wonder, because sometimes the women in the book seem to place that entirely on the club. Like, they're like, actually, the range of male appetite is really broad. And yeah. we maybe would make money if we were allowed in. But it's like the yeah. management that doesn't allow us to work. But of course, like, that can't be like 100% true, that like being conventionally attractive wouldn't give you access to like more of that appetite or something. Because that conversation with Gigi like sounds so similar to conversations that I've heard people have just lining up for like regular nightclubs, where they're talking about like whether they'll go home with someone and not get paid. And like, yeah, I wonder like how much of that is about stripping or about those managers, and how much of it is like kind of like a broader cultural problem about like beauty and femininity and expectations.
Definitely. I think it's both. It's an issue in society, and like, absolutely, that's a really good example of like folks going to a nightclub and kind of like experiencing the same sort of conversations or something. And then I think with stripping and femininity, it just like heightens it, like the fact that there's the scale in the manager's office. So not only is there the cultural expectation of like a certain kind of thinness and whatever like white supremacist conventional beauty standards, but there's also like literal physical elements, objects that like weigh your value, that you can like be put on a literal scale and told like no or yes based on what that comes back as. And obviously a scale is not an objective tool. It's a tool that the manager can use to make a decision about one's body, whether he likes how you look or not. I think the idea of like objective beauty is something that feels very like sickening. So when the Michelle character is kind of like forced into having these, not forced, like the situation, the context is making them have these conversations because they're in a situation where one, her friend Gigi, is like making less money than Michelle. And it's the first time that they've been working so closely together in kind of this like work wife dynamic. And it's very much not working for either of them, but it leads really quickly to sickness and to like a breakdown in definitely the working relationship and also even the friendship, where things like trust and support are breached through literally like money. And there's a scene where Gigi asks Michelle to count how much money she made because she wants an objective. She wants for Michelle to like see the really practical reality of how some bodies are more privileged than others. And I think that creates a lot of unhealth and like dis-ease and tension in friendships. And I think in the book I refer back to that the Crime Think poster that I hope I'm getting it right, but I think it just says, unless beauty is defined as what we are, the concept itself is our enemy, I think is what it says.
With the Medusa head, like the old...
Yeah, with the Medusa head, yeah. And I think that's such an important thing, and it felt like such a jarring contradiction to the reality that Michelle's experiencing, which is going up to tables with her friends and having them be like, not her. And then having to like work with that and make choices based on that. And it comes from toxic femininity and also from patriarchy and misogyny, but it also like creates that kind of same unhealthy dynamic in the friendships sometimes as well. And with that particularly bad kind of scene, those were in Niagara, mm-hmm. which boasts that it's like the best strip clubs in Canada. So they're like extra on the tip of like policing who can work there and who can't, and basically like splitting hairs between what bodies are good enough to be there and what aren't. And that was a very damaging experience, I think, that took that friendship a long time to recover from. And I guess the good thing is that it did, and that Gigi and Michelle are able to like support each other when they're not working as closely together in different scenarios, like later on, mm-hmm. as people who do the same kind of work. But yeah, I think that you're right. There is both broader and then internal issues with the idea of like beauty and standards and like picking and choosing who wins and loses effectively by literally awarding money.
Yeah. And I mean, probably the winners don't even feel like they're wholly winning in the world. Like, I imagine walking around the world in the body of one of those like angels that are described at the Niagara clubs is not like a wholly easy or positive experience either.
Yeah, I wonder. Not sure.
Okay. Anarchists are like in the book a lot. And anarchist politics or anti-capitalist politics come up at several points in the story, but they aren't really like the main point. Do you hope that anarchists themselves will read your book? And if so, what might they learn from this story of kind of one of their own?
I mean, yes, I hope anarchists will read my book. I also think a lot of anarchists I know are also sex workers, so I hope that those who occupy both categories can see some of their experiences reflected. And like I was saying earlier, I felt like the story didn't make sense if I didn't include some of the anarchist analysis, which really brought the Michelle character to wanting to do the work in the first place, which was, yeah, being really inspired by some anarchist elders and people that she'd known who'd like done that kind of work. And like historically, like from queer history, had done that kind of work. So she felt like it was sort of part of an anarchist lineage to do that kind of work, as someone who wanted to do it anyway. But it was necessary to like include that as analysis to make the book make sense to the broad public as to why she would make some decisions. But it didn't feel super necessary to like go into...
What? My radio stuck on CKUT. I don't know. But nah, fix it. CKUT, the number one radio station in Montreal. We give you the sun, the moon, the rain, the stars and the mountain. CKUT give you the word.
Welcome back to Off the Hour on CKUT 90.3 FM. You are just listening to a January 12th episode of From Embers. If you want to learn more about these creators or hear the rest of the episode, you can find them at fromembers.libsyn.com. And you can get a copy of Sid Brunet's memoir titled This Is My Real Name at arsenalpulp.com.
There is this thing. Do you realize there is this thing? Do you realize consciousness
is affected? And before we go, we're going to leave you with some news that you can use. The Imagine Manet exhibition is now on display in Griffintown in Montreal. It's an indoor immersive exhibition of Manet's Impressionist paintings. It's still open for in-person visits, including on Sundays. And the Candlelight Concert Series is coming to Montreal on January 29th, February 2nd, and February 5th. The series gained popularity for its surreal atmosphere created by renditions of classical masterpieces played by candlelight. You can find out more information at montrealsecret.co. And the community groups Montreal Solidarity Supply and Mobilizing for Milton Park are calling for donations to help unhoused Montrealers cope with the extreme cold. Items include warm winter clothing and specific furniture donations to help community members who just got housing. You can find more information at mobilizingformp on Instagram. And that concludes this Friday's edition of Off the Hour, produced by Montreal's Community News Collective. The collective includes Brian Jefferson, Alice Wu, Kate Addison, Joel Salmadal, and Sarah Jesmer. For more information on anything you heard tonight, or if you would like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please contact CKUT's Community News Department at 514-448-4041 extension 7000. Or news intern at ckut.ca. Also, you can follow us on Instagram at OffTheHourMTL or connect with us on Facebook. Search for us on CKUT. Listen to your
KUT Radio, 90.3 FM in Montreal.
KUT Radio.
Radio. Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
An episode to you, Ulume, August 31, 2021, Amalo, Nipemo, Tunga Suvitri. Ulume, William Kumatio Titsak, Apexolangajo, Barry Tahaugami, Pan in that Mutamit, Adjilosoma, Amalo, Ikajosom Ulune, Inutitotini. None of the Muto Ikajok too soon. Tusak sa ulang ang medyo inun ni guided mindfulness meditation practice titsi lang ayo kano inu tito kano kakta sa ng mga kaw yung mga nako amalo ni jota ni unin tuto tuni tusak kata lang ang mensi so nala tayo nakatsi ay I'm Anne Pisuti. Today it's August 31, 2021. Welcome to Nipiwood. Today, William Kumatsiu Titsak interviews Barry Tahaugak from Poninet about his photography work and Inuktitut revitalization. We also play some guided mindfulness meditation practices, courtesy of T.